You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
You can support us on Patreon and join our Discord server at patreon.com/WTFolklore.
Happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, da-ha-dee-da-ha-dee-ho. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your storyteller, Carmen.
Crime Weaver Tyler.
I'm Gordy. How about a name today?
Sure.
An alternate name.
How about it?
What about a whole identity?
Uh-oh. Yeah, take it.
It's starting to get scarier.
Let me pitch you on Greg Perineum.
Greg Perineum.
That's a strong name.
He's got a sex machine in his basement that he's never used because he's too shy. And a Mormon neighbor.
That sounds like the start of a good sitcom.
Did you say a sex machine?
Yeah.
You got any further details?
I don't.
Okay. Other than the for sale listing that says never used.
The new baby shoes.
Right.
They're right by each other in the magazine, which is weird. You would think they would split those up into,
at least,
like, different interest sections or something.
At least with a page break.
Look, yeah. Sometimes you do the formatting ahead of time, you put in that lorem ipsum, and then it's day of press, and what you get is baby shoes and sex machine, never worn, never used. And you got two spots left in your layout, and the deadline's looming, you don't have time to redirect InDesign, those things go next to each other. It happens.
Well, welcome to the show, Greg.
Thank you.
I hope that you get over your shyness. Be ashamed to send that thing off to someone else.
Better new than used.
I mean, better new than used for sure, but, like, live your truth. And
Carmen, can you help me?
Probably not.
Let me answer the question for you. You can't.
Okay. Yeah,
I figured. I'm in a YA fever that I need to sweat out. So I need you to tell me a new story.
I mean, I will do that. I don't think it's going to save your fever, though. You've been bitten by a number of media bugs lately, and I think that you're maybe a new medical anomaly.
Yeah, it's becoming hard to stabilize. I'm being torn in a lot of different directions. This past week, for a reason that I have since forgotten, I watched the entirety of the Divergent movie series based on the books.
How was that?
You forgot the reason, which indicates that whatever virus you have is like really good at protecting itself. But go on.
Well, it was strong enough to keep me watching each movie.
Are they good?
No.
Okay, I don't remember being that interested in them.
Mm-hmm. No, I knew nothing about them going in. Literally nothing, like, other than just this seemed Hunger Games-y at the time, just based on peripheral vision. So I never read the books either, and my partner had seen one of the movies and convinced me to watch it, and then we ended up completing the series because we had to. But
sure.
I do kind of recommend watching those movies, if you're even passingly interested, because they're a lot of fun to hate. Because every single plot point and world-building detail falls apart the instant you ask a follow-up question about it.
Okay, do you have, like, examples for us?
No thought was put into any concept further than the first one. And then it was written down and left on the page. Very much in a fairy tale style.
The first concept?
Every concept.
Or the first movie?
No, every concept in the series. Like, everything about that world doesn't make any goddamn sense if you examine it any further than what is presented to you.
Uh-huh.
Like, do you know what divergent means? in the context of the series.
Someone who doesn't fit into one of the predetermined slots that exist in this world for reasons.
So, Gordy, do you know anything about the series? Because I feel like you would love it.
Would I? You're not selling it.
It takes place in post-apocalyptic Chicago.
I know it is very, very broadly about some kind of youth resistance movement.
Very broadly.
But that is about it.
Yeah, it takes place in post-apocalyptic Chicago. Chicago is supposedly like the last living city on the planet, which is very funny to me.
Yeah, that's already falling apart under basic observation of the state of the world.
And it's divided up into five factions, basically, that are the author looked in a thesaurus for the types of people that she wanted to be in each faction and then picked a word to name the faction.
Yes.
For example, there are the erudite, who are the smart ones, and the dauntless, who are the Gryffindors.
These are like castes?
Yes.
Okay.
And if you don't fit into any of those, you are then called factionless, and you are double homeless in the apocalypse. Like there is still classism, even though everything is ruined.
The one eternal trait of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not too far off.
Every person is, when they reach a certain age, they're tested kind of like with a sorting hat into which of these factions they're going to fit into. Except for the main character, who's divergent, which means that she doesn't conform to any of them.
Including the particular faction that is the faction for people who don't conform to any faction.
Right, the factionless, which exists. But don't worry about them, they're double homeless, we hate them.
But she does not count as one of them.
No, she's divergent and special.
In spite of meeting the exact qualifications for that one, why is she different?
She's divergent. She doesn't conform. She has multiple personality traits instead of just one, like everybody else, allegedly.
Well, that's silly.
Now, does she meet a bunch of other divergent people
over the course of the series? Yes, but
they try to overthrow the caste system.
The very first thing that breaks apart is that she's told that because she's divergent, she doesn't obviously fit into any of these groups, so she can pick to be in whichever group she wants. Stands to reason, right?
Why don't they do that with a faction list?
Well, Carmen, literally everyone can do this, and they do.
I'm sorry, what?
How interesting.
So after you have done your procedure to find out which faction you fit in, you then decide which one you want to live in.
So and if you're you can... so if you're factionless, you can be like, well, I want to be a dauntless.
No, Carmen, forget the factionless. They live in the streets.
Nobody
talks to them.
This is a caste system with a lot of mobility, it seems.
Yes. It's like you only choose once, but you do get to choose any of them. No matter whether you were born erudite and are tested as erudite, you can then move to any of the other ones if you want to.
Why?
This sounds better than our current system.
Yeah, it does. Like,
so if I want to be a strong or a whatever, then I can just do that. I can just be like, now I'm a strong boy now. The himbo class.
I'm joining the parkour team who do parkour.
Is that one of the groups?
That's the Dauntless group.
No.
Is that what that means?
Does
Dauntless,
parkour
yes.
provide a vital civic service in
and
this
by,
world?
And by parkour, Wait. By parkour, I mean that the movie displays this as them hopping on and off of trains, slow-moving trains. That's their huge stunt for the movies.
Carmen asks a great question, which is, why are these, like, the basic organizational units of this society?
That's a great question. Who the fuck knows?
Like, what do the Dauntless provide to a functioning... society.
I'm glad that you asked, Carmen, because they answer it in the very beginning of the movie. The Dauntless are the protectors and the police of this new apocalyptic society.
That sucks.
So you might think that the next question would be, protect us from what? Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
The movie never answers that question. I don't know if the books do. It's kind of implied that it is obviously the factionless that the cops are keeping down.
Well, that also tracks with Hal.
But every character only ever says, there are protectors. And they never say, from what?
Also,
so every time it's uttered in the movie, I would respond, from what? And I never got an answer.
Look, I feel like the unexamined faith in protectors is maybe a relic of, when was this made? Early 2000s?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it wouldn't fly today. On account of, I mean, it would fly with some people, but
a big chunk of the population that's very much about that idea.
Unexamined belief in a protector unit.
Yes, instead of why do we even bother having cops?
It is starting to fall apart, though, where that was not even part of the dialogue, I think, in early 2000s.
Yeah.
At least not the larger run of it.
I don't want to belabor this further than I need to, so I do want to quickly tell you about the plot points from the second and third movie that complete this fucking Ouroboros of a plot that is just consuming itself slowly over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Gordy, you have played the Jak and Daxter games, right?
A long while ago.
You're at least familiar. And Carmen, you saw me play them, I think, at some point.
I'm sure.
Each one of those games is extremely different tonally and in content from each other. And the Divergent movies feel like that, too. Like, these movies feel very loosely attached to one another in what happens in them. Like, the first one doesn't have a plot at all. It is a feature-length Mulan montage of her learning to get strong to be in Dauntless. That's like a good 50 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
That's the act two is that, get strong.
That's act two and most of three.
Oh, okay. Someone didn't read Vogler before writing the script.
So in movie two, the plot circles around this mysterious magic box.
That's fun.
That allegedly the founders of the city The founders of Chicago. I assume they mean post-apocalyptic Chicago.
The original founders.
And not like the people who founded Chicago.
Nah, if you're going to make your post-apocalyptic city an existing city and you say the founders of this city.
Literally, that's what I was saying the entire movie, is like, why did you set this in a real location? It's only going to make me think about the past of that location and the history therein. But anyway.
Did they film it in Chicago?
No, they filmed it here in Atlanta.
Okay.
Atlanta has a lot of cities. Chicago, Tokyo, San Francisco. Atlanta's been them all.
Sure. I didn't know if it was just we're shooting it in Chicago, so now it's set in Chicago.
So anyway, this magic box. The founders created it. And just a spoiler alert for the first book and movie, Erudite are the bad guys.
What? Smart people are the evil ones in a world where parkour is important?
They want to take over the government.
What?
And tell everyone what to do.
Just like scientists today.
So they have this magic box, which was allegedly designed by the founders to only be openable by a divergent. A chosen one. Because in order to open it, you need to pass all of the fucking VR trials that are coded into this box by each of the factions.
That sucks.
So you need to be able to display the personality traits of every faction. So only a divergent could do that.
Right, because only a divergent can be smart and parkour, and I don't remember what the other ones are at the
same
time.
And be kind and not lie.
Be Hufflepuff and
And then there's a fifth one.
This sounds like if you gave an AI 1,000 young adult books to read, this is what it would produce.
So then the erudite people who have corrupted a portion of the cops, not all of them, because our main heroes were also in Dauntless, but they're the good ones.
Of course.
It's just but a few some bad of the Dauntless.
Why did they not make the cops the bad guys at least?
Well, they are a little bit.
But only the ones that got caught by the smarties.
Yeah. Anyway, they start going around the city, scanning who the, like, they... There's so much. So they have mind control serums in the future.
Sure.
And that's the other thing that I hate about this series, is there's so much fucking bonkers future technology in this desiccated Chicago. Like, their priorities are not straight at all. Like, they are living in burnt-out husks of buildings, but they have magic mind control serum and computers that tell you if you're Dauntless or not.
Look, Tyler, this is the city that survived because its founders, hundreds of years ago, made a magic box that requires all the Hogwarts houses to work together. Or one person to be all Hogwarts houses at once.
Exactly. So anyway, they have special bullets that they can shoot at people that make them go to sleep unless they're Divergent. Because they're able to circumvent the serums.
How?
Exactly. Because
it works on every faction.
Yes.
But not when all faction present in one?
Yes, this is their way of determining if you're Divergent or not. So they can round you up. Because they're starting to collect all the Divergents.
Wouldn't you think that there'd be something related to the test given to the people?
But they have to or shoot kind of, you like, to find out?
Or yeah. Just tag people. Like, just like put the Bill Gates tracking scanner thing in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're good. Like, that would make a lot more... I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but...
Do you mean the COVID vaccine?
Yeah, give them the COVID vaccine, then take Bill Gates to the street like a scent hound and see what he comes up with.
Oh.
So the problem that Erudite is having is that more and more Divergents are seeming to be born now.
More people can be kind and smart and do parkour?
And that's bad.
Yeah, their society is going to start breaking down if the factions don't hold. So they want to open this magic box that only a Divergent can open because they think it will have the key to dealing with the Divergents.
Well, then why don't you take a little Divergent baby and raise it to your like propaganda machine?
Mm-hmm.
So that it's under your control and it can open whatever boxes and invade whatever sleeper bullets you want it to.
So they start scanning all of the Divergents that they collect, and they somehow can determine the percentage of Divergents you have.
That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. So they scan like one guy and they're like, oh, he's only 10% Divergent. He's basically normal.
He's like a little bit nice.
Mm-hmm.
This is
he
weird.
Mostly does parkour, but sometimes he tips extra.
I was thinking about this series this week. I don't know what brought it up. I was thinking about like young adult stuff over the last like 10-15 years. Don't know what brought my mind to it, but bizarre that here we are now.
Anyway, surprise, the main character is 100% Divergent.
What?
So not only is she special, she's double special.
She's super extra. I don't know how you're 100% so 9% the normal.
Is Divergent a metaphor for something?
It's supposed to be a metaphor for nonconformity, but it doesn't work presented. Right.
Does that mean like if it was like feels like X-Men and it's like, oh, this is like an LGBTQ allegory, then it might not
Gordy,
be good,
she is,
but like I get it.
She is 100% Twisted Sister, we're not gonna take it anymore.
Yeah.
It's playing in her brain at all times.
Yeah.
Anyway, she completes all of the trials, so she's able to open the stupid box.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad, I guess.
Who founded Chicago?
And this is the first movie still?
No, this is the second movie.
Oh, I see.
Like I said, the first movie is just the Mulan training montage.
Oh, that's a lot. That's quite a lot of that for one movie.
Yeah, so she gets the box open, and inside is a pre-recorded message from the past. From the founders of Chicago.
Does it include a message from, I have looked this up now, Jean-Baptiste Pont de Sable, Pont de Sable, I have Sable, I don't know.
No, it's from some lady. I don't think she ever gets a name.
Great. Well, she's not the founder of Chicago, because this Haitian fellow in 1750 did it.
Anyway, what the message says inside the box is that they designed the box to be opened by a divergent, because when a divergent could open the box, that would prove that their factions, the society they set up, was successful. It was an experiment to create a divergent.
What?
That was, I guess, strong enough to pass all the trials to then rebuild humanity.
What?
Because they set up the factions to separate everyone in the hopes that eventually someone would be born who would bring them all together again, I guess.
I hate this.
It's an, like I said, it's an Ouroboros.
Also, the whole divergence thing falls apart when you introduce factionless people.
Mm-hmm. So
it is confusing.
So the third and final movie is about eugenics.
Yeah. That's great. That's where I thought we were going.
Great.
Because it turns out that Chicago has been a big Truman Show the whole time for the real humanity that was still outside living in the toxic, irradiated wastelands.
Nice.
Who created this pristine city experiment to create these divergent people.
That's...
And they were doing that because at some point during the war that destroyed humanity, the nuclear war that happened outside, people's genetics became damaged.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But they figured that their hypothesis was that through this experiment, eventually someone would be born with genetics that had naturally healed itself over time. So that's what divergents actually are, is 100% pure genetic people. Undamaged.
Everyone else like just the rest. Has, yeah, their genes got so damaged that they can only express a single personality trait.
Right.
What?
Huh?
And as far as I can tell, the only power that, like, the only special otherworldly science fiction power that divergent people have in this setting is the ability to circumvent the serums that these people created. That's the only thing that makes them different from anyone else. Because everybody acts the same.
Yeah. All right.
Well.
So you should watch these movies is my point.
I feel like I did already, so I think I'm good.
Are they books?
Yes.
They are books.
They started that
way. Are those better?
I have no idea. But the best part of all of this, like the funniest fucking cherry on top of this shitty cake, is that they, as was customary at the time, they wanted to split the last book into two movies.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
like the Harry Potter and the Hunger Game.
Sure.
But the movies were returning less and less box office with each release, and the last one tanked so bad they canceled the second movie. So the movie series will never be finished.
So it just sort of ends mid...
It just sort of ends.
Cool.
So it goes, I guess.
Look, the lesson here is just write your damn stories.
Yeah, no fucking kidding. If this could become a movie franchise.
What I learned is that plot is nothing. From all of this, which I think was always true, but especially here.
Also, I watched the Artemis Fowl movie, and that fucking sucks. Don't even bother.
Yeah, no.
That's just a miserable experience.
I saw enough of the trailer to know not to mess with that. That book is so good.
First couple books, I think, are good, even.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked the second one.
If I remember right.
I, real quick, learned The Secret to a Happy Life.
Mm-hmm.
Seems good.
Via The Sims 3.
What do you got?
We're watching someone play in The Sims 4, the more up-to-date version of the game, and not the, like, decade-old one that I have. Or 13-year-old one, I think it is, actually. They were playing a Rags to Riches, and I was like, well, that sounds fun. So I created Kombucha Freegan. she is a loner who loves the outdoors, very frugal, and a mooch. And she blew all of her money on an empty lot and a really good spa day. So she started the game with nothing, like no belongings, no furniture, just an empty lot, which is the least I can give a sim.
But thanks to the spa day, she was mentally prepared for the trials that were to come.
This is the happiest sim I've ever run. Like, I've had sims where I've done, like, the cheat to give them all the money. I've done sims that have just, like, lived regular lives and regular jobs. I still have Brood Mother somewhere from the unfinished 100 Babies Challenge. But this person, no matter what's happening, no matter how many times she pees herself in public, does not let it get her down. She has never been anything less than very happy throughout the entirety of the game. She also is, in spite of often stinking to high heaven, because it did take a long time to get her a shower, and I have limited patience for making her wash her hands 40 times, manages to bag the most dates and interest in the people around her.
It's all confidence. That's the lesson here.
Yeah, apparently. Like confidence and dumpster diving are the keys to happiness, because that sim is, like, chill as hell. Doesn't matter if she's sleeping on a bench or a bed, she's very happy about this. She's been on a number of dates with pretty much all married men.
She has a type.
Those are the ones that call her, and I just say yes to everything. Some of my rules with her, because Sims economy is real broken, I have to buy anything she says she wants before I get practical stuff. I have to say yes to the things that come up, like the opportunities and things. So she goes on dates with married men a lot of the times. Most of the time they are disgusted by her flirting because they asked her out on a date, but they are married. She is a mooch, so she does end a lot of dates with soup. So the lessons I'm getting from this.
You were telling me a bit before we started recording, and that was my favorite part of the story, is that she apparently subsists mainly off of loose soup.
The loose soup that she, like, bums off of random people. She, at the beginning, one of her neighbors is a very rich lady. And she just had stuff that she dumpster dived on her empty lot. So it was, like, a lot scattered with a dishwasher and a table and some potted plants. No toilets or anything. So anytime that her, like, bathroom rating got real low, I just kind of sent her over to the rich lady's house, and it didn't matter if it was midnight or not. This lady would answer the door and let her come in and hang out and watch TV and use her bathroom. So that was pretty good. But yeah, like, the lessons learned here is, like, ask for what you want, get the soup you need, and otherwise don't worry about anything. And sometimes you can find a dishwasher in a dumpster. That's pretty great.
So, Carmen, can you please replace Divergent with another story for me? I need to think about another story.
Okay.
Get it out of my head, please.
What do you know about King Midas while we're talking about, like, living happy lives and wish fulfillment and large homeless populations?
He touch a daughter, he make her a gold.
Yeah. Gordy, what do you know about Midas?
The gold man?
Yeah.
Goldfinger?
Yeah.
That's a James Bond movie.
Featured heavily in the third Aladdin film, straight to video.
Yeah, he did. That was a good movie, though.
They should have put that in theaters.
They should.
Re-release it, Disney.
It should still be in theaters.
Did they get Robin Williams for that one? Or was that
they
one
did.
Of the ones
he came
he
back for that yeah. one.
Came back. Aladdin's dad is in there. There's like a sinking something in the ocean, like a fortress, maybe.
The Hand of Midas is in there.
yeah.
turns anything to gold.
Wild. Well, it turns yeah. out that the Midas tale is actually an Arne Thompson type, number 782.
How many times has it happened?
Well, it turns
out... Around the world.
So most of what we hear about the Midas tale is the bit where he, like, meets up with Bacchus' drunk schoolmaster and gives him a good time and is, like, real hospitable to him. And so Bacchus is like, hey, man, thanks for not letting this guy die in a ditch. So what do you want as a gift? And he's like, make everything I touch turn to gold. And he's like, oh, no, I can't eat or drink. And I can't touch my wiener or anything. That sucks. but it turns out there's like a whole second half to this story.
Was it only, was it hand stuff only?
No, because anything that like went past his lips, he couldn't get someone else to feed him or anything. Once it touched any part of him, it became gold.
And I think
gold.
Like his daughter hugs him
mm-hmm.
and she turns to gold as a result.
Yeah, I'm sure in one version of it, that's a problem. Yeah, and then he's like, oh no, I hate it.
How come the world never turned to gold when he stood on it? Checkmate,
shoes.
Fairy tales.
Feet got welded in them shoes.
Yeah, yeah, gold shoes. Got gold. So. His feet never touched anything else.
Because gold flippy floppies. Because the gold doesn't carry that trait.
No.
So really presumably what he not. Just needed to do is put on gold gloves.
Well, any gloves that would then be gold gloves.
Yeah.
And gold face.
Was Midas,
mask.
Like, fucking stacked from walking around in gold clothing all, like, those, that's weighted training
dragging
clothes.
That shit around everywhere?
And I've seen what it did for Piccolo and Goku.
So, the Midas ATU type 782 has nothing to do with gold.
What about Dragon Ball Z, though?
That's... What about King Midas being ripped as shit?
Don't know about that, but there's a lot to do with horns and ears. So I'm going to tell you a little anthology based on a suggestion from Millipedish, a name that you know and fear. So the second story I'm going to tell is the suggested one from Millipedish, but it was kind of short, so I went through and found the others of this type. So I've got a small anthology for you. So we're going to start with the originator, which is the Midas tale from Greece.
Yes.
And this particular version is pulled from the 1855 Bullfinch's The Age of Fables, which he sourced from Ovid's Metamorphoses. Alright, so it starts out as the Midas tale that we all know and love. He helps Bacchus's bro, gets the ability to turn everything into gold. Turns out that sucks, so he asks for it to go away, and Bacchus is like, yeah, I kind of warned you that was a bad choice, but you were pretty cool, so go.
I offered you a PlayStation 2, and you said, no, give me gold hand.
So it gives him bathing instructions that will get rid of the whole gold touch problem. And he goes, and he does that, and apparently the sands of whatever river are gold now. But the second half of the story starts with Midas having like a wealth-based version of PTSD. Like all things wealthy are important to him now. So he goes wandering in the country to worship Pan. So he basically starts the kombucha freaking life. So he's hanging out worshiping Pan, and one day Pan challenges Apollo to a lyre-off. So they're just going to have like a cool beatboxing competition with music. And they choose...
Is Pan aware that he's now like the Grateful Dead to this old king?
I guess he like... It's a groupie for Pan following him everywhere. So Pan might be vaguely aware of him and has signed every poster he has.
Like, is he trying to show off here?
Maybe. Or Pan's just bored and he's like, you know what? You know, no one's invented Glee yet, so we gotta figure out a way to, like, get music to be cool. So let's...
This will spice things up.
The show? Yeah.
That whole era of... acapella music being a TV and film plot.
It took until you said that for me to realize that you were talking about the instrument and not them just like bullshitting each other back and forth.
And it's Pan's gonna immediately break the rules somehow by playing his pan pipes instead of a lyre, but they're just gonna have like this cool music competition.
How sweet would it be to roll up to one of those with an instrument that is named after you, unless that's not the case, but I'm gonna believe that it is.
I was like, yeah, you think you're, hey, god of music, you think you're so great?
This is my Greg flute.
So they choose Tmolus, the mountain god, as an umpire for this competition.
So this is like the world's first Woodstock now.
Yeah. So Tmolus shows up, he sits down, and he clears the trees out of his ears so that he can listen, which is just kind of a nice detail. At his signal, Pan blew his pipes, and he and Midas were jamming to his rustic country ballad. Just like nice old country jams. And then after...
Carmen?
Yeah?
I'll let you continue, because I have to. I have no control here. But I can see why this has been edited out.
This part of the famous story.
Yeah, I can see why not a lot of people continue on this far into the tale.
Where all the retellings end with the gold bit.
Yeah.
Going away. Yeah. So Pan basically does the Jolene of his time. And Apollo stands up and he's got his fancy golden laurels and his Tyrian purple robes. Like, he's just a rich fella, not this half goat down to earth guy. And he does his own like modern rock concert with his fancier instrument, and the mountain god's like, fuck yeah, you win, no contest, get that rustic country shit out of here.
I would like the rich to be richer.
So everyone, like, Pan's like, yeah, I guess, yeah, it is a more modern form of music he plays. I accept my defeat. And everyone's all good, except Midas is 100% a Pan stan, so he questions the judgment. And Apollo, who is apparently just a rich asshole, would not suffer such a depraved pair of ears any longer to wear the human form. So he gave Midas ass's ears.
Nice.
Which is real petty when you've already won the competition. You just have like one dissent.
Right.
Dissenting voice.
I think the Olympians were sort of known for that.
Yeah, I mean, they were not role models. So King Midas, to deal with the fact that now he has donkey ears, begins a new fashion of wearing an ample turban or a headdress, and only his hairdresser knew the secret of his ears. But the hairdresser was just like, man, this gossip's just too juicy. I cannot keep this secret. Like, it is part of the trade that we chat. So he has to go to the meadow, dig a hole in the ground, whisper the secret, and bury it.
Does that work?
Apparently, but it does have the side effect of when a thick bed of reeds grew up where the secret had been whispered into the ground as, like, fertilizer. When the wind blew through them, they would whisper the story of King Midas's donkey ears, and it still does to this day. So somewhere in Greece, there's a field of reeds that will just be like, hey, bros, Midas got ass ears.
Yeah, if you just stand in that field and listen, you'll hear them saying, donkhead, donkhead.
So that is the portion of the Midas tale that gets the Arne Thompson Uther type.
Why?
Because only one man turned things to gold, but it turns out many people have gossipy hairdressers.
Oh, that specifically, not even the donkey ears.
So this brings us to Millipedish's suggestion, the Presidente, uh-huh, who had horns.
Okay.
The what?
The Presidente who had horns.
Presidente.
Yes. This is from the Philippines. It's from Mabel Cook Cole's Philippine Folk Tales from 1916. This is a story that was brought over by the Spaniards, probably from their own proximity to Greece. And then it was reworked for the setting of the Philippines, was the note in the 1916 story. So, in this one, instead of a king, we have the presidente, which is the head of a town, who, unlike Midas, is not a stand for any particular god. He's just an unjust asshole. And one day, this presidente got so angry that he wished he had horns so he could better frighten the town.
I mean, I get it.
It's a bold form of governance. So, by the fairy tale chaos theory that we know and love, the horns begin to grow immediately. Never wish for something.
Or, like, do. It sounds badass.
Yeah, I guess so. Wish for things carefully. So he sends for a barber to cut his hair and asks the barber, "Hey, what do you see on my head?" The barber has a sense of self-preservation, and in spite of seeing the horns clear as day, he says he sees nothing.
What if that was the exact wrong answer?
Well, the presidente reaches up and feels his horns in front of him and asks again, and the barber is like, "Okay, yeah, they're... You do have some, little horns there. I see." All right.
So that was a 50-50 shot, and Barbara chose both answers.
Yep. I choose heads and tails. Can't lose.
I see whatever you want me to see.
So the presidente then threatened to hang him if he told anyone about it. So he wins and loses. And the barber was greatly frightened by this threat.
Was the point not to intimidate all of the townspeople?
I think there was a buyer's remorse.
Okay, that's not being expressed.
But when the barber got home and away from the immediate threat, the juicy gossip is just too tempting. So he digs a hole under some bamboo in a field so that he until it's big enough that he can crawl into it. So he's a lot more dedicated to his hole digging than the Grecian barber. And he whispers in that hole that the presidente had horns, and he climbs out and buries his sins. Bamboo grows real fast, though, so people would pass by the bamboo.
It is known for that.
Yeah, and they stopped in amazement because it sounded like there was a voice in the bamboo whispering that the presidente had horns. So this gossip starts to spread at the market, and the bamboo field becomes a big tourist attraction. Everyone has to go listen to the bamboo and talk about the president's horns. And then the councilman...
Man, these people can't wait for radio to be invented.
Yeah, it's a rough time before the advent of television and novels.
I just want to listen to anything that's not my thoughts.
Bamboo fields, please.
Please, someone drown me out.
Podcasts don't exist yet. I need something. So the councilmen come check it out. And then they run to the house of the presidente. And his wife says, No, he's sick. You can't see him. Please go away. By this point, his horns had grown by a foot. And the presidente is so ashamed of him that he asks his wife to tell people that he can't talk anymore.
Second thoughts.
Yeah. So the next day when the councilmen show up to check on him, she gives this excuse to them. They replied that they don't need to hear him talk. They just need to see him, because there's a bamboo field whispering that he has horns, and if he does have horns, he has no right to govern the people.
There's a bamboo field out there talking mad shit about you.
We gotta know. Like, this is a big scandal. So she refused to let them in, so they broke down the door anyway. They see the horns on the presidente's head, and they killed him. Because, as they said, he was no better than an animal. That's the end of that one. That's where Midas came, like, turned into.
And that's how we got Cabela's Big Game Hunter arcade cabinet.
You want to hear a couple other little variants on that?
Sure.
See how far this traveled?
I'm fascinated to know why this is the part that so enraptured everyone who needed to come up with retellings.
Yeah, like the Midas Gold Touch thing had kind of a moral about greediness and wanting too much.
also was generally more interesting.
Yeah, there's an internal logic. There was a lot more cool stuff going on. This one started as a story about differing opinions on musical tastes getting punished, and has turned thus far into just sort of nonsense. It wasn't really a moral to that story, because it wasn't like he learned that he needed to be kinder or anything. It's just...
No, he learned that he needed to be deader. And thus was.
So we're going to go to India and see what happened over there with this story. With the story, The Child with the Ears of an Ox. This was collected by someone we've encountered at least once before, I believe. Cecil Henry Bompas Bompas.
Yeah, nice.
Mm-hmm.
In his book Folklore of the Santal Parganas, 1909. Hopefully that is a specific location and not some weird early 1900s Britishism. If it is, I apologize for my ignorance. Once there was a son born to a certain Raja. My favorite, like, folklore qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
And this child, just a certain town, a certain Raja, a certain time. We're not going to tell you which one, but it is a certain one.
Know that it did occur.
And this child had the ears of an ox.
Born that way.
Yep, just born with the ears of an ox. The Raja is very ashamed.
Does it perchance have the feet, face, head, and belly of an ox?
It seems like regular kid with ox ears. So I don't think we don't really have a minotaur situation. But who knows?
Or just an ox that this senile old person is calling a son.
Maybe. The Raja's ashamed of his ox-eared child and let no one know, but he couldn't hide it from the barber because there is a necessary ceremony of shaving the child's head. And you just can't keep secrets from your barber. So the Raja made the barber vow to tell no one what he had seen. Barber went away, and he was keeping the secret, but it had a very unfortunate side effect. The secret made his stomach swell to an enormous size.
With stress?
Like, I guess.
Is he bloated?
Yeah, he's bloated with secrets. fulfilling many a fantasy that I have seen expressed on the internet.
Excuse me?
Inflated with secrets.
Oh, wait. That's like a...
He's turning violet.
That's like a fetish or something, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
So the barber went along rather unhappy with his bloated secret belly. And he met a dom, which is a low caste member and not, in fact... Another element of the dark side of the internet.
It's a shame.
This could be a much different story, though.
This very easily could be adapted to be a very, very different story. And this is the cast that can... It's going back to the Divergent system. This is your faction list.
Uh-huh.
It comprises of scavengers, basket makers, and drummers. No one can do parkour.
Not even a little...
So this fellow asks about the unusual stomach size, and the barber just blurts out the secret, and the stomach returned to the usual size. That's all he needed to cure it.
Oh.
So the factionless fellow goes his way, and he cuts down a tree and makes a drum out of the wood. And then he wanders around the town playing the drum and begging. And when he came to the Raja's palace, he drummed and started singing, "The son of the Raja has the ears of an ox." It's a pretty catchy tune. So the Raja is very angry, swears to go punish the barber, but our factionless fellow assures him that, I don't know anything about the matter. It's the drum singing the words, not me. I don't even know what they mean. I can't do parkour. I don't know. So the Raja is pacified, and the barber isn't punished. The end.
Hmm. The end, huh?
Do you have any more, or is that the anthology?
I got one more, very short.
Okay.
I have
barber thoughts now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So our last one is a Celtic tale. A little bit more. There are two other versions of this one, but they're more similar to the ones we've already shown. So I went with the version of March's Ears from John Rice's Celtic Folklore, Welsh and Manx, 1901. And this tells the tale of one of King Arthur's warriors, who went by the name of March or Parch Amherchion. And he was the lord of Castle March in Lane. This man happened to have horse's ears. In order to keep this secret, he would kill every man that he sought to save his beard. I did keep that phrasing in
there.
Wait, what? So he looks for people to give him a good shave. But they, of course, then see his horse's ears, and so in order to keep the secret, he's got to kill him.
The hell does that have to do with getting shaved?
Because they see his ears.
You'd see his ears in a lot of other situations, too.
He can keep him hidden from everything but his barber. So he has to be a reverse Sweeney Todd. And kill all the barbers that give him a shave.
I would watch that musical, maybe.
The reverse Sweeney Todd?
I want both to be playing at the same time, though. Like, Sweeney Todd is playing while someone is undercover trying to... just killing barbers trying to find Sweeney Todd.
I want to see the shot in that movie adaptation where Sweeney Todd is about to cut the throat of the person sitting in the chair, but then he feels a blade at his neck, and he turns behind him, and it's the person who he thought was in the chair, and he looks down in the chair, and it's actually a watermelon on a fucking broom or something.
Yeah. That's the definition of a sting operation.
I was going to say we could turn this into like a Sweeney Todd last 5 years mashup where you have... like the two stories happening simultaneously, but like one scene is Sweeney Todd as we know it from the beginning of the tale to the end, and the other
and
one
it concludes with them at their with their knives at each other's necks.
Well, that's the middle part where the wedding happens. It's the only time both Sweeney Todd versions are on the stage at the same time.
It would be very funny if they met at that moment and do cut each other's throats, and then the rest of the play is like 90 minutes of two dead bodies on stage doing nothing.
And that's somehow both the past and the future.
Yeah. It's a paradox.
The one man only lived after he died. He was a ghost the whole time, and it was all a dream. But in the spot where March would bury the bodies of all his barbers, some reeds grew up. Because reeds love them, some secrets and corpses as fertilizer.
Barber bodies are so nourishing.
And then someone came by and they cut a reed to make themselves a pipe. But when they played this pipe, it would not make any other sound than March and Herachian has horse's ears.
What?
I thought it was going to be the horrified screaming of ghosts.
Nah, people shout, play Freebird, and he tries, but instead of Freebird, to roughly the tune of Freebird, the pipe just shouts, March Amherchion has horse's ears. Or Amherchion has horse's ears. So at some point, the warrior hears this this musician playing these pipes, because the musician just, I guess, keeps playing them, in spite of the fact that they do not make music. And he would have killed the innocent man, except when he tried the pipes, so he did a little bit of science first, at least, he also couldn't make the pipe produce any other sound.
So he kills the pipe.
Well, he learns where the reed that made the pipe had grown. He's like, oh. Well, and then from that point forward, he made no further effort to conceal either the murders or his ears. And I guess neither of them had consequences because the story ends here.
Yeah, did anything come of that? Or are we good?
We're apparently good. Story's done. We end here.
Okay.
And that's the Midas anthology. There are others, but they're similar enough to these to not be interesting.
It's not a lot of gold.
Not a lot of gold. An awful lot of barbers.
So Midas.
Yeah.
Midas. Is the
Let's talk about barbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's fascinating to learn, and like I guess I could have just assumed as much, but it's fascinating to learn that even in ancient times, barbers were known for chatting with. Like, that's just, that is just part of the profession that you assume.
Yeah, you gotta talk
to this. You're going to talk to this person. And it makes sense, you're a fucking captive audience. And there is the loose thread of them holding a blade up to you.
Yeah,
so you're gonna answer any questions they have for you.
They have to ease your worries, and they can tell you whatever they want.
That's all I had, really. It's just interesting to think about that is just an eternal fact about barbers that I had never really thought to think about, mm-hmm. even.
They're the one
but it is a constant, apparently.
Yeah, I think they would probably have been, for most people, the only other person who got that close to you if they weren't a partner.
Mm-hmm. Very intimate.
Yes, so
it's an intimate profession.
So, yeah.
A barber would make a very good spy.
Probably have.
Oh, if you're giving haircuts to enemy generals.
Yeah.
I'm just going to assume that everyone I meet is
from a now spy.
On. That's a safe.
For someone.
Yeah, it's a safe assumption.
That's all I got, though. There's nothing else to say, really. Like, the morals aren't even consistent from tale to tale.
No, if they are present at all.
For, like, one of them, he was a bad man, and so he got a comeuppance. But the other two, they were just kind of born afflicted in this way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We don't even get to see the kid themselves. Like, the kid does not play a role.
Like, a lot of Arne Thompson types, the thing that binds them is sort of a feature of the narrative, like either the point to the narrative or even just an element of it, like a Rapunzel or something like that. This is literally just there's barbers keeping secrets about weird heads.
This is a part of the Arne Thompson family type of religious tales, The Truth Comes to Light, which encompasses 780 to 849.
Yes.
The official name for this is Midas and the Donkey's Ears, which I wanted to keep the full name of the Arne Thompson type mm-hmm. away until you'd heard the other half of the Midas bit. But yeah, this also includes the Singing Bone, which we have read. Something called St. Peter's Mother Falls from Heaven, which is probably fun. That's the bit of the Midas tale that lived on in the world.
For whatever reason.
So, write your stories. Write your stories, but don't ever assume what part people are going to connect to.
Cause... Do it the way you want it to. No rules.
No rules, just write. And maybe bum some soup off of people. That's the way to happiness.
And only look in the mirror on your birthday, because you're supposed to be selfless.
It's true.
That's a plot point in the first Divergent that never gets mentioned again.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me?
She was born into the selfless caste. They're supposed to do charity for everyone. And so they're not supposed to ever look at themselves because that would be selfish. So they get a little bit of mirror time on their birthdays.
Oh. Was this done at the beginning of the story? And mm-hmm. is that the fucking excuse for the, it was a Tuesday morning, I stopped to look at myself in the mirror and I had the same brown hair that I always did?
Maybe.
Like physical description.
As a way to describe your main character.
Yeah. In a first person present narrative.
Like I said, it only comes up once in the movies.
Yeah, it sounds like a fucking excuse to write that self-description trope into a story and be like, there was a reason that she stopped to look at her mirror because it was her birthday and the world's like this now.
I don't overly mind the trope.
Also, Gordy, if nothing else, you need to watch these movies to see how her brother runs.
Naruto style?
No, I wish. What's his name? Ansel Elgort or whatever.
Baby, yeah.
Baby Driver. He plays the brother character. And he made he made the acting decision to run like a fucking weirdo to display that he isn't as like physically capable as the main characters who are supposed to be the Dauntless characters. So he made the conscious effort to look like he doesn't know how to run so that they look more physically capable than him.
So it is genetics that makes you the thing, but you can just choose.
You can just choose.
Even if you're like, I fucking suck at running, but I'm going to be Dauntless or parkour or whatever they're called.
Mm-hmm. But even by the third movie, when they've been doing all these adventures, he's still running like a fucking moron. And it doesn't make any sense.
This is interesting.
Anyway, I need to stop thinking about Divergent.
How many of these are there?
My intern is signaling.
There's three. They're all like 2 hours long.
How fascinating.
I do appreciate the links that you will go to, Tyler, to like fritter away your time on this planet.
Yeah, but I've turned it into content, so it wasn't a waste now.
It was research.
Now it's now it's in amber, in audio amber forever.
Ready to be cloned later.
for the new Jurassic World. All right, well, I think
I briefly talk about the new Jurassic Park movie?
Is there a new one?
There is a new one. I just want to pull up a quote that my brother sent me because he watched the trailer.
Yeah, hit me. Light me up.
And then I'll let you end this episode, Carmen, please.
Free us all.
He said, I just saw a teaser trailer for the new Jurassic Park, and the only line of dialogue is, humans and dinosaurs can't coexist. Revelatory.
How interesting. Yep.
Is that not what they have explored in every one of these movies? Why are we still making these? Write your stories, guys, for the love of God.
Just do it.
For the love of God.
Someone's going to love it, and you never know when a movie producer will pick it up and ruin it for you, but to the tune of a lot of dollars and worldwide acclaim. So just do it. Just do the thing.
I can ruin one of my stories for enough money.
If it gives me enough money to like just sort of chill and write more stories, sure, destroy one of them, whatever. Anyway, we're gonna get out of this extremely educational episode.
a very erudite episode.
Extremely erudite.
Wait, real quick. What would your Divergent class be?
Let me pull them all up so you guys can answer. I did take a test.
I don't want to sanction. Government test. I took my quiz. What it is, I want to choose like the people of New Chicago.
Since I got mildly winded bringing my laundry down to the garage today, I'm going to go with I'm not Divergent.
Mm-hmm.
What's the?
We have abnegation.
What does that mean?
The selfless.
Oh sure, okay.
Mm-hmm. Erudite.
And which one are the cops?
Dauntless.
Okay, not that one.
Amity, and
those are the nice ones.
Yeah, they're just nice people. And candor, the lawyers.
What a weird spread.
I'm a factionless.
Yeah, and also obviously you can choose to be double homeless if you want.
I think I'm double homeless. Like realistically, what do each of these factions do in a society?
Well, the erudite are very smart. And they want to run the government.
Well, probably you should if you're smart.
But abnegation runs the government because they're selfless.
Probably you need both.
Experience.
Dauntless are the cops, Amity are nice people, and Candor are the lawyers.
What do the nice people do?
It's unclear. They kind of run like a homestead, like a farm.
Run like bodegas and stuff.
There's just like a farm to feed everybody.
It's kind of like an open air society.
How much call is there for lawyers in this world?
Like 20% of their population is lawyers, so.
And you know what? They don't need them at all because all the lawyers do is administer truth serums that it makes it painful for you to lie.
So you need one lawyer.
Wait, not impossible. Just it just hurts.
It just hurts a lot. Well, because they're going to know you're lying because you're making a funny face because it hurts so much.
Oh, I see.
So they're kind of just there to observe. And they need the one guy with the needle to stick it in your neck.
I see.
And yeah, that's future Chicago, baby.
I think I'm factionless. I'm double homeless.
You just ride the train.
Yeah, back and forth. It's a pretty good metaphor for my life. What about you, Gordy?
I either want to be Divergent and Special or Amity and have nothing to do.
I think the answer I got from my quiz was Amity, which is very funny for the Crime Weaver. Kind of a sleeper agent, I think.
Sure.
I mean, I could blow your cover here and say that, like, the real Tyler fits pretty well, but the Tyler that I see play video games and personify himself on the podcast definitely is more of a fool. I don't know. You'd be some kind of weird, horrifying mashup of the of the lawyer class and a Dauntless. But doing the opposite of both of us. I don't know. I'm tired. We're done.
No,
we're
one more thing. One more complaint I had about these movies.
Yeah.
One more thing.
Yeah, go for it.
So she joins the Dauntless in the first movie.
Yeah.
And at the end of their very first, like, two more things. Sorry. The first one's real quick. The first one's real quick, I promise.
Give me,
it's just
give
that.
Me 100.
There's like 14 times in that first movie that they refer to something as like an initiation trial for the Dauntless. Like they just keep sort of popping up. Like here's another initiation, Dauntless style. It's still happening at least 50 minutes into the movie. Anyway, the first one they go through is that they have to jump from very high down to a net that they can't see. And then when they all land down there, they're officially determined to be Dauntless enough to be in Dauntless. And then they are separated by the sort of transfers from other casts and the ones that were born Dauntless.
Yeah.
But every Dauntless portrayed in the movie is like a young adult. Like, maybe max 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them have children. And none of them are raising families because they're all just doing parkour all day and shooting each other. So how are Dauntless even born?
Oh, well, apparently a lot of them just transfer into it because it's the coolest one to do. You get to do parkour all day.
Sure, I'm not worried about the ones who transfer into it. I'm worried about the ones that were allegedly born Dauntless, because who borned them? This is what I mean by, like, you can ask one question about any aspect of it and it just falls apart. There is no glue. Please end the episode, Carmen.
Yes, all right, we're done, we're finished. You learned a lot, mostly about the Divergent series, which is not what this podcast is
yet. Time for a reboot.
It'll be the Diversion podcast. Diversion, Divergent. Thank you to all of our... Thank you to everyone who made it this far into the episode, first off. Like, hats off to you. Congratulations. You win a secret prize, which is Tyler's endless appreciation and love, which, given the company that you keep, is maybe not a prize.
Next week, though, we're talking Percy Jackson. Get ready.
But I've heard those are good.
Thank you, too.
Maybe Aragon after that.
I could not finish that book.
Maybe some Inkheart.
It's bad.
The official
Spiderwick Chronicles.
Thank you to all of our patrons for paying us to do this. More power to you, too. Thank you so much. Thank you to our top-tier patrons, Lucky, Maxwell, Queen Savagery, Triumphant, Hierius, Midori, Baby Grandma, Becca, Lobster No Longer, the new and improved Haley, It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Super... Oh, wait, no, it's just a plane. Awkward, Project Bird Fall Informant, Funky Little Strawberry, Lemur, Spaghetto Popping On Off With a Bang, Caitlin, Danielle, Uwu, Ya Girl Olwen, Allie, Knife Dad, Copas Cat, Vespa, A Normal Human, Versus, Keeper of Too Many OCs, Pyrus, Nathan the Scott, Alex, Plato's Dave, are you looking at the world, or is Dave doing shadow puppets again? Maya, Grey Goetic Prince of the Arcane, High Listus of Wimbus, and unsurprisingly Yahweh Yowie, a dubious little creature, Haley Prime, the original B. Haley you know and love since 2018, Dominic, Justin, Lily, Izzy, and Jenna, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, sorry.
We apologize profusely for all things we do, have done, and will continue to do. Because we're What the Folklore, and that's how it works.
Also, thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Doug. Okay, that's how it works.
Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, da-ha-di-di-ho, tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, she lived happily ever after.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have story suggestions for us, please send them to wtfolklore@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Oh god, oh wait. There's one more thing. There's one more diversion thing. I almost fucking forgot. Yeah.
Let me go.
So when she first arrives at Dauntless, the person she meets is a man named Four. Like the number four.
It's a cool name.
Is he fantastic?
No. Anything but.
Anything but.
He's the love interest of the story. Yikes.
Oh, great.
Speaking of, I have another thing after this thing.
No.
Yeah, all right.
Just stream the movie.
This is going to be forever.
What else we got?
So she meets this man named Four, who tells her that she, like, he asks her name, and she doesn't answer immediately, so he's like, what is that, a hard question? And tells her, like, you can pick whatever name you want, but you only get one shot at it, so make it count, because I don't care what your real name is, just tell me what you want to be called. So her name is Beatrice, and she decides to go with Triss.
Yep.
We find out that his real name was Tobias. And he chose to be called Four, the number four.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because at Dauntless, you take this serum to discover how many core fears you have.
Uh-huh.
And he has four fears.
Seems.
So his name is Four.
Pretty low.
I don't feel like I remember all of them. One of them is heights. But my favorite joke that I would make throughout the movie was if anyone would ask him, what are you afraid? I wanted him to, like, hold up his hand and count out the number four and then just look at them and say, no.
Okay, yeah.
But the last thing that I wanted to say about Four is that for the books, there is a collection you can get, which is the entire series, and then a collection of short stories about him, which is titled Four.
Are there four of them?
Guess how many there are.
Not four.
I'm going to guess, since I asked if there are four of them and you said to guess, that it's like six.
There are five. How the fuck do you fuck that up?
Also, you only get one shot at your name. Think back to like your online usernames in the teens. And that's what you get to be called for the rest of your life.
Also, she didn't take the fear test until much later in the movie. So was he just not saying anything until he took the fear test and then named himself? Again, any question, and it all falls apart.
Why is there a fear test?
I'm gonna stop recording now.
I am too. Let me go.